A footnote to history. Climbing the steps to the platform might have been the hardest thing Leo had ever done, but he was determined to get there on his own. Determined to salvage that much pride, though the dead knew pride had done him no favours. Pride had put him here in the first place. He used to laugh at climbing mountains. Now he had to gather himself for each step, sweat springing from his forehead. The old wound in his right leg still hurt worse than ever now it had to bear most of his weight. But it was nothing to the pain in his other leg, an endless, crushing, sickening throb. And the irony was, the leg wasn't even there. He kept trying to wriggle his sore toes, work his aching ankle, put his burning foot down to steady himself. Then he remembered they were gone. His leg was crushed, the wreckage sawn off and burned, and everything he'd been was gone with it. No longer a warrior, no longer a leader, no longer a Lord Governor. He'd be a footnote to history, a man who turned himself from hero to villain with his own arrogance and recklessness and... He gave a whoop as his crutch slipped on the top step and spun from his hand. He clutched at nothing. Then the side of his face banged hard into the platform. He heard a few gasps, a whimper from somewhere, maybe him. His left arm was close to useless. With an agonizing effort, he could lift the hand, produce the slightest trembling twitch in the first finger, but the rest dangled limp. He barely felt a pin stuck into them. The surgeon said metal blasted from a cannon, along with bits of his shield, had riddled his arm and ruined the nerves. They'd stitched the wounds, but there was nothing more to do, and the irony was they were healing a man they were about to hang. He worked himself up with his good arm, teeth gritted, managed to ease his right leg under him, groaning as his weight went onto the stump of his left. But once he'd made it to hands and knees, or hand and knee at any rate, how to get further? He couldn't reach for the crutch without falling. And even if he could, how would he push himself up? There'd been a time when achieving the impossible for Leo Dan Brock had meant besting the greatest swordsman of the age, or breaking an enemy's line single-handed, or turning the tide of war against the odds. Now, achieving the impossible meant standing up. He felt a firm hand under his elbow and was lifted carefully to his feet, or foot. "There we go." The crutch was wedged into his armpit again. He glanced sideways to see one of the executioners, kind brown eyes through the holes in his black mask as he helped Leo forward.
"I'm fine," said Leo, weakly shaking the man off.
Fine. Broken, defeated, in constant agony, with a useless arm and an amputated leg, convicted of treason and already on the gallows. Fine. He blinked about at the ruined town square of Stauffenbeck, the scene of his crime and now of his punishment. The corpses had been hauled away, but there were still heaps of rubble in every corner, only blackened pillars left of the ruined market hall where his last charge foundered. The shattered clock tower loomed above, its one remaining face with hands frozen at the moment of his downfall. The place still smelled faintly of burning. 11 of his fellow conspirators stood in a row on the platform, all with hands tied behind them, all watching him. Some he didn't even recognize. Lord Mustard was at the far end, bloody bandages wrapped around one eye. Lady Wetterlant, even now keeping her pointed chin high. Lord Barazin, closest to Leo, blinking about as though he could hardly believe what had happened, what was happening. At the feet of each one of them was a trapdoor. Beside each one of them was a lever. Above each one of them was a noose. It all felt strangely bland, strangely banal. He'd hardly known what to expect. Yet another irony. The first hanging he'd ever attended would be his own. With jaw clenched, he hopped to the trapdoor and stood swaying, each breath a smothered groan. There was a taste in his mouth. Blood from the fall, maybe, or a lingering sweetness from his breakfast. He licked at the grooves between his teeth, trying to root out more. tiny pleasures seem huge when you know there's no time left. All the wonderful things he used to have, used to do, that he'd hardly noticed, let alone appreciated. Now a sweet taste on his gums was a bounty to feel thankful for. He glanced up, the sun bright in the sky, the long beam black overhead. The nooses dangling down, his noose right above him. He wondered how many necks had already been stretched by it. After what he'd done, there were a lot of traitors to hang. They might have done 10 batches already today. From the cellars, where they'd been keeping the prisoners, you could just hear the clatter as the trap doors dropped open, the thud as the ropes stretched taut, the faint gasp of the onlookers each and every time. Was there dried blood on the rope? He felt vaguely affronted by that. For something so intimate, each person should surely get their own. Felt like dying in another man's underwear, though the underwear of those who'd gone ahead was no doubt in a far worse state. People pissed and shat and leaked every fluid when they were hanged, he knew. It had seemed quite a laugh when Antaup told them all about it over drinks. Didn't seem much of a laugh now, needless to say.
Harvel Dan Mustard!
Leo looked down, blinking. It was only now that he noticed the audience. Not a large one, and most of them strangers, seated on an assortment of battered chairs dragged from the wrecked buildings about the square. It was Lord Chamberlain Hoff who spoke, droning the name from an ink-spotted list.
"You are found guilty of high treason and open rebellion against the crown and sentenced to death."
King Orso sat beside him, scarcely looking like he was enjoying this any more than the convicts.
"Have you anything to say?"
"I did not fight against my king," growled out Mustard. "I fought for Angland, that's all."
On the king's other side, Lord Marshal Ruxted gave a great snort of contempt. The worms of the closed council. But Leo could summon up no hatred. He saw now that their tyranny had only been an excuse, and a flimsy one, too. All he'd wanted was an enemy to fight. Durant had been right about that. Durant had been right about everything. The one consolation was that his best friend could remember him as he had been, would never have to see him like this. It was better to imagine that Leo Dan Brock died on the battlefield. It was true, in every way that mattered. He'd been a great fire burning brightly. Why cry at the snuffing out of the feeble ember that remained? One of the executioners offered Mustard a hood. He shook his head. He was guided onto his trap door, and as the noose was pulled tight, Hoff was already naming the next in the line of the doomed. Leo's bleary eyes wandered across the faces in the audience. Not far from the king sat a gaunt woman with close-clipped hair and a bandaged forehead. He wondered for a moment why she was looking at him with such desperate intensity. Then he let out a gasp, and the one knee he still had began to tremble so badly he nearly fell again. It was his wife. He'd never seen her stripped of all artifice before. Without her paint, her wig, her jewels, her dozen attendants, her 100 carefully calibrated smiles, he realized now that even her appearances at breakfast had been carefully staged, even her appearances in bed, especially those, maybe. It seemed she'd emerged from the Battle of Stauffenbeck almost as broken as he was. But it was her. What should he have felt to see her in the audience at his execution? Useless guilt at what had become of her, impotent anger that she'd urged him on, sappy sorrow that he wouldn't see his child born. You'd have thought a man with only a few breaths left would have no time to waste on shame, but shame was what won, a crushing weight of it, at how pitiful he must look, at how badly he'd let her down, at how little was left of the man she'd married. He could hardly bear to look at her, even though hers was the only sympathetic face in the whole ruined square, because hers was the only sympathetic face. At the sight of her, he might realize all he was about to lose. Hoff was still naming the convicted. Each faced death their own way. Some raged against the world, some tearfully begged forgiveness. Lady Wetterland barked insults at every witness until the king ordered her gagged. One young man with broken eye lenses started to make a speech on the deficiencies of monarchy, maybe hoping to bore a pardon from the king. Also cut him off after a minute or two with a curt, "If you wanted to change the world, you should have won." There were even different kinds of silence. An obstinate refusal to speak, a baffled inability to understand what was happening, a lip-trembling, stuttering, quivering fear.
"Stephen Dambarazin, you are found guilty of high treason and open rebellion against the crown and sentenced to death. Have you anything to say?"
"I have,"
croaked out Barazin, jowls wobbling as he turned to stare at Leo.
"It was Leo Danbrock that brought us to this. He was the instigator. He was the perpetrator. It was you that brought us to this, you bloody fool."
There were a dozen other people who'd brought them to this. 100. Isha, nowhere now to be seen, had sown the seed. Huygen and Barazin himself had eagerly watered the sprouts. Savine and Stour had their parts in tending the crop. Even Ricker and the Breakers, by going back on their word, had helped bring in this harvest of hangings. But Leo didn't have the strength to defend himself. He hardly had the strength to look up. Without him, it could never have happened. Why not shoulder the blame? He wouldn't have to carry it for long.
"I throw myself on your mercy, your majesty!"
Barazin was almost sobbing.
"It was all Brock!"
"You damn coward!"
snarled Mustard from the far end of the line. The blubbing brought nothing but contempt from His Majesty in any case.
"Stick a hood on him!"
he snapped, and Barazin squawked as the hood was shoved over his head and the noose pulled tight. Leo saw now that his father had been wrong. It's after the battle. That's when a man finds out who he truly is. He was no hero. He never had been. He was a fool, a great bloated tower of vanity. It had got his friends, his allies, and hundreds who'd followed him killed. Now it would get him killed too. He wondered for a moment if he might have become a better man for the lessons he'd learned here. He stared down at that endlessly throbbing leg that wasn't there. It hardly mattered now, did it? He'd go back to the mud, as the Northmen say, and all the hard-learned lessons with him.
"Leonold Danbrock, you are found guilty of high treason and open rebellion against the crown and sentenced to death. Have you anything to say?"
The whole while, as he listened to the others rage, blurt, weep, reason, all to no purpose, he'd wondered what he'd say. Now the moment came, the last moment, he found he had nothing. He looked up at Orso and shrugged.
"I'm sorry."
He hardly even recognised his own voice anymore, throaty and weak. He looked over at Savine.
"I'm sorry. That's all."
If he stood much longer, he'd fall. If he looked at her much longer, he'd weep. He shook his head as he was offered the hood.
"Let's get on with it."
And he did his best to lift his chin, so it was easy to tighten the noose about his throat.
"Most kind," murmured the executioner.
Hoff rolled up his list of names and tucked it in the pocket of his robes. Ruxted brushed dust from his shoulder. An ordinary-looking, curly-haired fellow leaned forward to murmur something in the king's ear. Something familiar about him. Could he be the man who'd come to the docks with Leo's mother, begging him not to go? By the dead, his mother. Why hadn't he listened to her? King Orso gave the executioners a quick nod, and they pulled the first lever. Leo flinched as Mustard dropped with a clatter and a thud, and a set of crows that had gathered on the bare beams of a fallen roof flapped outraged into the sky. Once they'd started, it went shockingly fast. Bang, and the second man was gone, rope trembling. Bang, and the third vanished. The young lecturer in governmental theory was next. He squeezed his face tight before he dropped, like a boy jumping into a cold mill pond.
By some freak chance, his eye lenses must have bounced off at the bottom, spun back up through the trap door to rest on the platform. One of the executioners bent and slipped them into his pocket. Leo's life was measured in moments now, in breaths, in heartbeats. He didn't want to look, couldn't look away, winced as the executioner pulled Lady Wetterlant's lever. She didn't drop. He pulled the lever again and again. The trap door refused to open.
"Damn it!"
came muffled from behind his mask. Also squirmed in his chair, Hoff rubbed at his temples. Another executioner stepped forward to mutter with the first, pointing angrily at the trap door. Lady Wetterlant growled into her gag. Four ropes stretched taut. Seven prisoners still stood, waiting helplessly for the end. One of the executioners started kicking at the trap door, while another dragged pointlessly at the lever again. A third had ducked under the platform and could be heard scrabbling with the mechanism below. Leo bared his teeth, an agony of waiting. Each moment a horror, but still a moment he was grateful for. The onlookers coughed and narrowed their eyes as a gust of wind swept grit across the ruined square. A few nooses down, one of the conspirators sobbed inside his hood.
"Fuck yourselves, you bastards!"
Lady Wetterlant had worked free of her gag and now started screaming insults again.
"Damn you all, you vultures, you worms!"
King Orso jumped up. "For pity's sake, just..." Her trapdoor sprang suddenly open. She had been turning, fell awkwardly, scream suddenly cut off as she caught her arm on the edge of the platform and slithered through. It soon became clear that the drop hadn't killed her. The rope twitched wildly. A kind of spluttering groan came from below. Everyone stared as it became a spitty gurgle. Leo saw piss run from the trouser leg of the man who'd been sobbing to pool on the platform around his boot.
"Proceed!" said Hoff angrily.
The next man swooned, knees giving and dropping to the platform. One of the executioners dragged him up, slapped his hooded face, stood him straight on his trapdoor. Clatter and thud as he dropped. As if making up for lost time, they rushed from one lever to the next, thud, 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 each sending a faint vibration through Leo's own noose. The canvas over Barazin's face flapped faster and faster with his desperate breath. The executioner grasped his lever.
"Wait!"
came muffled from under the hood.
"I..."
He dropped under the platform, and with a snap, his rope jerked tight. So it seemed great lords of the Open Council meet the long drop just like other men. Leo looked up at Savine. She gave a desperate smile, tears in her eyes. Meant to give him strength, maybe. He'd never loved her like he did at that moment. Perhaps he'd never really loved her until that moment. He tried to smile back, to leave her with something good. Some glimpse of who he used to be. He felt the executioner step up beside him, heard him grip the lever that worked the trap door under his feet. Under his foot. Still wasn't used to having just the one. He closed his eyes. Time stretched. A breeze came up and kissed his sweaty face. He took a long breath out and held it. His last breath, he realized. He waited for the end.
"Stop!"
He thought it was Orso's voice. He wasn't sure. He opened his eyes again, had to squint somehow as if into a wind. The king wasn't looking at him. He was looking sideways, at Savine. And she was looking back. Everything was still, time chopped up into stretched-out moments by the thudding of Leo's heart. Someone cleared their throat. One of the crows, gathered again on the naked beams, flapped its wings. Barazin's taut rope still hummed faintly. The executioner's hand shifted on the lever. Then Orso slumped back in his chair and gave a sharp wave of his hand.
"Leo Danbrock, I commute your sentence to life imprisonment."
There was a collective gasp. Savine closed her eyes, tears running down her face.
"Your Majesty..."
That curly-headed man was saying, a warning note in his voice.
"My master will not..."
"I have made my decision,"
also nodded towards the scaffold.
Take the rope off him!
And Leo felt the noose loosened, then slipped over his head. As if that had been the only thing holding him up, he slumped, crutch clattering down. The executioner was ready and caught him, lowered him to the platform. Now he did cry. He couldn't help it. He huddled on his one knee, shoulders shaking with sobs, and the tears pattering from the tip of his nose onto the rough sawn boards. He couldn't even raise his useless left hand to wipe them. He heard the king's chair scrape as he stood.
"Lady Brock," he snapped, "for pity's sake, get your husband down before he embarrasses us any further."